Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Listen, there's a number of candidates, and they all bring different things to the table and what they've specialized in the past. I think there are going to be certain tenets that doesn't matter who that play caller is on defense that we're going to be about, and that's going to be fundamentals, that's going to be toughness, that's going to be relentless pursuit of the football, and then we're going to be excellent in situational football as well, both end of the half, end of the game, third down, and red zone.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. That was Ben Johnson talking about who he was going to hire as his defensive coordinator. We know who he has hired as his defensive coordinator, and he's saying how they plan on playing, and that would be the way that you've seen defenses coached by that man perform. They've always been pretty good. He did a pretty good job when he was with the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, Dennis Allen is highly respected as a defensive play caller. His scoring defenses have been in the top 5 when he was running the show in New Orleans for the Saints. Mm. So that's quite a contrast in experience levels and just in profile than his offensive coordinator, Declan Doyle, who comes to the Bears, 28 years old, from the Denver Broncos, a guy that Sean Payton really liked enough to give him a role in that on his staff, and now he comes as the youngest offensive coordinator in the NFL. I don't know what exactly his responsibilities will include. It won't be play calling. But I'm intrigued because anybody that gets a job like this, a line in his resume that big at 28 years old, it's impressive. And so I'm very curious to see how the young man represents himself, what his role exactly will be, and how he connects with players who are, many of whom will be his age or older.
Yeah, that's wild.
DJ really Moore, what's he, about 28? They may have graduated from high school the same year.
That's crazy. It's crazy.
It is a bit crazy.
It is, but I think you're right. I think that, it is a position of authority. It speaks to the respect that you have for someone that you give him this kind of an opportunity. And even if he's not calling plays, it's still, and I'm pretty sure that when Sean McVay was given an offensive coordinator role, he was actually calling plays at 28 years old. But nonetheless, this is one heck of a job to have on your resume. It looks great. And hopefully he can learn a lot from Ben Johnson. And you would think that given that he's coming from a different area and has different ideas, and he'll give you that Sean Payton touch on different things, it could be a very successful kind of combination. You would think that there's got to be elements of this guy that Ben Johnson saw in himself. He must see some of himself in this guy and want him.
Well, it's interesting then, because if that is indeed the case and you want stability, continuity, and longevity, all the things that you seek in when you have a young quarterback like Caleb Williams, that's probably not what you're going to get if Declan Doyle has success in Chicago.
But he's not the guy calling the plays, David. I mean, like, are you going to hire him? Another team going to hire him as a head coach?
Did you look at Liam Cohen? I mean, I know he was calling the plays in Tampa, but these guys get promoted, and then it's not inconceivable.
Okay,
it's not inconceivable. No,
but Liam Cohen was calling plays in,
sure,
in
I know.
Tampa. I'm picking nit here.
A little bit.
Let me say this, though. I think you got to remember, even if we're making fun of Liam Cohen and that it sounded goofy, some of the stuff he said, the fact of the matter is that guy ran a successful offense and they really liked him in Tampa. And the reason they're mad is that they're losing him. And in order to try to prevent that, they offered to make him the highest paid offensive coordinator in the NFL. So they are, you know, everybody's mad that he left, but he probably did the right thing. He probably made a pretty smart move by trying to put the situation he was going into a better light for him. As bad as it seemed that Trent Baalke gets run out, you know, you want to have more control and you want to have your guy and all that other stuff. It makes sense what he did, especially since they really liked him in Tampa and wanted him back.
Yep. Yeah, that's no doubt about that. So regarding the Bears staff, we do know that there's been some internet reporting that has been bad reporting or some tweets that have been inaccurate. You got to the bottom of that. So I guess the bottom line is Olin Krutz is not joining the Bears staff.
He's not going to be the offensive line coach this year. We know that.
Okay.
So I don't know.
There was a tweet that created a little bit of a stir last night from somebody out there in the Twitterverse that suggested that Olin Krutz had mended fences with the Bears and was going to be the new offensive line coach.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they've mended fences, but I do not believe that's an accurate tweet, and it's hard to believe there could be anything on Twitter that wouldn't be correct.
Very difficult to believe. Yeah, so that's not going to happen. The Bears more likely to talk to a guy like Dan Rashar, who Bigsy has reported. Dan Rashar is a football lifer. He's a guy that is well-traveled, and he's had a lot of different jobs, most recently with Tulane when he joined in 2023 after working it for the Saints. I think on one of those, probably the same staff as Dennis Allen, so there might be a familiarity there. Was the Saints tight ends coach. This is somebody that went to Northern Illinois. Was an offensive lineman, I think, at Northern Illinois, but also coached at Northern Illinois. Looking at his long list of coaching stops, I have to note that it includes also Illinois for the Illini in 2003, 2004, Cincinnati, Michigan State. Then he went to the NFL, but also on there, Ball State.
Mm-hmm.
He was the offensive coordinator in 1994. Also on there, Butler. They have a football program. Yes, they do. Offensive coordinator and offensive line coach. That was his first, one of his first jobs. So Dan Rashar might be in the mix to be the next Bears offensive line coach.
That's interesting. That's a very important position. You know, there's part of me that is sad that it's not Olin, to be honest with you, because I think he'd be more than capable of doing that, and he'd be great at it. It's just, I just love the idea of doing a pregame show with the offensive line coach on there talking about the game. Wouldn't that be fantastic? Because we're not.
You think he
go.
Would do that? You think he would coach the games and then do the pregame and the postgame?
The postgame might be a bit of a rough one.
Just I think the pregame would be tougher than the post.
Okay. Well, either way, he's probably got.
Although he would need a cooling off period.
after the
like post- players, yeah, yeah, coaches, yeah. So we wouldn't need to come on minutes after.
I think he'd be at his best without the cooling off period. We've heard that. They've got to get someone in here that can help them to develop some of these players that they've got here. And I'm thinking specifically of the third round draft pick. You take a guy like that, he comes pre-injured and you don't really get a camp with him. This is a huge offseason for Kiren Amagaji. We're going to find out. And if, I don't know. Is he... He's got supposedly all the tools you would need to be a left tackle. Could he move inside? What would those tools, how would they work if he were in a phone booth? I don't know the answer to it, but they need players. They need offensive linemen, and I'll be very curious to see if they sign any of their own, if there are already deals to be made.
I'm not looking at this as a guy that, just because Ryan Poles drafted him, he's going to get every last shot. I think that...
Well, I'm not saying every last shot, but no, he's got to get better.
Yeah, well, he's got to get better or else he's going to get passed. And I think he's probably more likely... I don't know what the more likely outcome is, but I don't think that this regime, the first 3 years, then we're going to look at it. Yeah, Ryan Poles is going to have some maybe preferences for guys that either he drafted or signed. But I really... If this is indeed a new era... The new voice, the strongest voice in every room is Ben Johnson's. And so if Ben Johnson doesn't like something about the traits of a Kiren Amagaji, I doubt that he's going to be a big part of the mix. If he does, he will be. I think it's going to be something like to expect Ben Johnson's ideal left tackle will be something that maybe we'll learn, like the ideal guard type, the ideal wide receiver type. Every coach has a type. And I think those are the things that, based on his presence now in the organization and how much clout and power he has and wields, that's going to be the determinant.
You're absolutely correct. I'm just saying that I don't want to, when you are part of an organization, when they've invested in something in you, you've got to make sure you do the best to find out what they saw and what they imagined. So it doesn't matter if Ben Johnson was here or not. That is a third-round draft pick. They invested something in him, and they need to make sure before they move on that they find out if he can play or not. It's as simple as that. So, and I think Ben Johnson will approach it that way, because every player you control is a commodity that you need to help and try to develop. And for far too long, we've kind of turned a blind eye to that sort of thing. I'm hoping that this guy really does kind of intercede and help out with not just the offensive line, but with every receiver that they have on the roster, with every quarterback on the roster, every player that he can help out with. I think it's incumbent upon them to try to get the most out of guys and try to look for ways to improve them.
Yeah, they've got to do that. And just it's going to be fascinating to see how many holdovers return and are thought of differently. And the Bears have not had good luck in the third round. So,
well, that's an understatement.
Zach Pickens was the last third round. What's his status on this roster? And does it change with the new defensive coordinator who's going to be a fresh set of eyes?
Healthy and active would be his status.
And Dennis Allen's going to have a big say in that. So, yeah, things are different. The Bears probably will be represented well. We haven't heard too much in terms of details. The Senior Bowl is this week, then a Mobile, and I think that is an opportunity, the first opportunity for them to go as a staff, evaluate the talent, start to build a database, start to really look at the prospects that they'll be drafting in April. I haven't heard yet. I think Ben Johnson took Monday off, returned to Michigan, took care of some details, probably back at it today, interviewing coaches, providing some clarity, because there's some guys that are remaining in limbo, which is a week after he was hired and introduced. That's a long time when you don't know what your future holds, even though it is understandable given how much change that's going on at Halas Hall.
You would hope the organization sent those guys down to Mobile so they can mill around and talk to people and maybe even speak to some other coaches for jobs. It's different these days, the Senior Bowl, than the way it used to be. But, man, I'll tell you what, back in the day, some guy just got hired for a job, you need to hold up at a hotel, because when you went to the practice fields, you could see people who needed jobs just waiting for a moment for them to have a chat with you. And it was really kind of difficult for coaches that had openings to deal with all of the people that wanted to kind of, it's like a coaching convention of sorts. So, you hope that some of the guys who are in limbo get a chance to go down there, and I'd be working on my next job, even if I thought I had a chance to stick around, because it is a tough thing to deal with, especially for guys with families.
So a lot of conversation about Ben Johnson today, but he was not the most probably discussed or most interesting coach talked about at the United Center last night. Bill Belichick was in town.
Yeah.
And I think I have – I don't know why he was in Chicago, but I do know how he spent his Monday, according to doing a little bit of looking at the Twitter machine. He had a home visit in Nashville during the day. Five-star quarterback Jared Curtis posted a picture of him and Belichick at his home on Monday afternoon.
I cannot believe Bill's out recruiting.
I know.
I just can't believe it. Yeah, how you doing? I just can't see it.
And he's posing for all these pictures with all these coaches and families, and wow. It's very...
So then he came just for the Bulls game?
I don't know. At 4:06 p.m. yesterday, Jared Curtis had an in-home photo taken based on his home recruiting visit from Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick was at the United Center shortly thereafter. That's a very long day. That's a very long day. He was in the suite. He visited Billy Donovan. So maybe he's in town.
Did KC say he was down at the press conference?
KC tweeted out that he was at the back of the room during Billy Donovan's post-game press conference after the Bulls' big victory. Maybe he wanted to see Joker play. You want to see the best perform. Jokic is in town.
Maybe he wanted to see Vooch. Maybe he's curious about P. Will.
I don't think that might be enough to lure him. Friends, longtime friends with Billy Donovan. It could be as simple as that. But he was also
late dinner
with Mike Lombardi. I was told our buddy Mike Lombardi.
I saw Mike. They showed a cut up to Bill, and he was standing next to Mike.
So,
and I said to Dustin, hey, he used to be on, call him.
Yeah, we got his number. He used to be a regular guest.
He
relished coming on.
He was great.
And really giving his blunt, honest assessment of the Bears.
And it was blunt and honest. It was definitely fair, I think. But, you know, maybe the Bears are changing. Maybe we'll see if any of this. I'm very curious to see if anything carries over. You know what carries over to free agency is money. And the fact that they've got money means they'll be a player in free agency. But I'm very curious if people are interested in the Bears because they're seen as an organization that's starting to do things right.
And well, I mean, competence is attractive.
Yeah.
And you always wondered before exactly what it would come down to, because if all things were equal, it always is about the money. What you want to be in a position is that if the money is equal, you want the Bears to be able to be the team that emerges as the one that looks like an opportunity.
Yeah.
One that looks like an organization that knows what it's doing now.
Team on the rise.
And headed in the right direction.
Team where you can come here and win. That's very attractive to players.
And maybe that's a better way to look at, you know, some of these head coaching vacancies and some of these moves. It's not maybe all about the individual. Sometimes it's about the operation. And the Bears seem to be an organization that is learning, in the process of learning from its mistakes, and maybe realizing,
well,
that they now they know what they don't know.
It's the first time in a while where you could say the Bears aren't making the same mistake.
Mm-hmm.
They're making different mistakes.
Yeah, and well,
maybe they're not making mistakes.
Maybe they're not making mistakes.
I agree with you.
It's more hopeful than it has been because
it's new.
Again, and people can push back, and certainly the proof will be what happens next, but they drafted a guy that was a consensus number one quarterback going into the draft. That was, you can argue, the Jaden Daniels comparison is not going to be one that is good to make right now if you're a Bears fan, but they did the right thing at that right time. It was the right decision. Because I'm talking about in terms of a consensus decision. It was probably universally agreed, or the consensus agreed that among, Caleb Williams...
Among the Bears or among the league?
I think the league thought that Caleb Williams was the number one quarterback to be drafted, and most teams would have done what, exactly what the Bears did.
And I know a few people that thought that they should have gone.
Yeah, but a consensus
direction.
Means there might be some dissent, but the consensus is the consensus. And the Bears just got the consensus best available head coaching candidate. The Bears don't typically... don't have a great history of doing what the consensus believes is a smart decision, making a smart decision.
Was there a consensus that Mahomes was the best quarterback that year?
No.
Was it Watson that was the consensus?
I think Deshaun Watson was.
Over Mitch Trubisky,
yes. I think Deshaun Watson was coming out considered to be the guy that was the safest number one overall pick or the safest quarterback available.
Who's the consensus this year? Just out of curiosity.
I don't think that is clear. I think you could have all kinds of debates. The fact is, this is the year there is no consensus.
Yeah.
That would be a tougher spot, and you would not want to be drafting number one. Much rather have the number one pick last year than this year.
I saw that CBS Sportsline dropped their top 50 player list yesterday, and they had Cam Ward as their number one pick in the draft. They had Shedeur Sanders 40th. Now, that's just the way they put the board together.
Wow.
But I was very surprised by that.
That's low.
That's low.
That's very low.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for a guy that's likely to be drafted in the top five.
Well.
Just because of the value of the position.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, that was – what was really weird about it is they had Gentry – as like the third, like he was in the bottom, he was like in the 20s or maybe the third. I don't remember where he was, but the comment the guy said is that basically he takes into account the positional, the fact that the position isn't highly valued. And I thought, well, then why do you have a quarterback at 40?
That doesn't make any sense. That's a very inconsistent logic.
Yeah, I just thought it was inconsistent.
Yeah, it is.
And again, we don't know how this is going to work out, what Mel's going to think, or what the fine folks at Pro Football Weekly or whoever is putting together their list. All that stuff will be still got a lot of time to figure that stuff out. We're just really getting into, with the Senior Bowl, that marks that you're getting into periods where people can start making their statements on what to think of them, et cetera. There will be guys that we don't know yet who could be at the top of the draft.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That's how it is every
year. It's part of the process.
All right. 312-644-6767. Mully and Haw on the score.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way.
Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
It was pretty minimal on our side. Obviously, pretty big deal. I think there was a little bit of confusion on what our role was in that. I think for us, we were happy to get, the asset we got back. In moving Taylor, I think it was something that was, probably going to happen at some point. We're not going to use our to retain salary transactions on being involved in this one and then maybe another one with Taylor later on. And so it was one or the other. So we were either going to be involved in this or we weren't.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's Blackhawks general manager Kyle Davidson. He spoke on Monday and talked about the deal. Did that make sense to you, Mr. David?
I think it's one of the more complicated trades that we'll talk about it, try to simplify things. They traded Taylor Hall. They got a third-round draft pick in return. The bookkeeping about retaining $4.625 million of Mika Rantanen's salary is an odd thing to understand or grasp, but it allowed them to be part of that deal so they could get something in return for Taylor Hall, who they were intent on moving. So Kyle Davidson's simple explanation is, hey, we were going to trade him before the deadline anyway. We got a third rounder in return. They can use that moving forward if they go into restricted free agency. They have signed an offer sheet. You have a third rounder that you can be part of the compensation. So in theory, I understand it. It is a bit complicated. The bigger question, I think, big picture is,
yeah,
I thought this was the year that they were going to take a step forward, not a half step back.
He addressed that. He addressed that yesterday.
I know, but I...
And he basically said he thought they'd be better.
He thought they'd be better than second to the last team, second to the worst team in the league, and they should be. Because when you go out and you get Tavo and you get Bertuzzi and you get all of those older veterans, and Taylor Hall was here coming off an injury, the expectation was you were going to be more competitive.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is you look a lot like last year's team, and the team that will take the ice tonight against the Tampa Bay Lightning down in Tampa, I believe 9 of their 18 skaters, after they called up Landon Slaggart, 9 of their 18 skaters will be 23 or younger.
Mm.
So we have the hockey version of the White Sox in some ways.
Wow.
Because not that they're the worst team, they're setting records for futility, but let's get on with it. And I think Connor Bedard is there. I was surprised a little bit because Taylor Hall also was somebody Connor Bedard acknowledged going to at times for direction, advice, mentorship, whatever, and now he's gone. So it's all about Bedard. Frankie Nazer's had a nice little run here lately. They've got a ton of young talent. They've got prospects galore. They're still, I understand where Kyle Davidson's coming from, saying the future is still bright. I just think the present remains frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, you need the fast forward button, and that is so true with the White Sox as well. It's great to have a bunch of guys and to, believe that they're going to turn your fortunes, but it's number one, waiting on them. Number two, actually seeing them come to fruition. We've seen a lot of people around here highly thought of, and guess what? It's not like every one of them hits.
It's taking longer than expected, exactly. Yeah. And I think they made a coaching change, and he referenced that, Anders Sorensen. I don't know how serious of a candidate he will be for the permanent job at the end of the year. A lot depends on what direction they decide to go and how aggressive they decide to be. It's still...
When will they be ready to win? Is it two more years in your mind? How long is it?
I think now it's got to be some... After this season, it seems unrealistic to think that next year could be a competitive window when we're talking about playoffs. I would think that they're probably 2 years away from being a playoff contender.
Yeah.
And that's disappointing, to be honest, because you thought that they would be closer than they are. Bedard, it hit that reset button much the way, every franchise in town, they have that moment where they do something that you hope that they could do and accomplish. And maybe it's a long shot, but it comes through. The Hawks get Bedard.
Yeah.
You know, the Bears signed Ben Johnson. You know, the Cubs, they're going to get Kyle Tucker. I mean, there's a lot of different flashpoints that, like, get you excited. And then things either happen or they don't, but you respond to them. And right now, the response to the Hawks, it's been somewhat deflating watching them this season.
Okay, so let's, like, the Cubs are clearly the closest team, but I don't know how close they are with everything with the Dodgers that we talked about earlier. Who rate them? Who, you know, how long is the window for the Bears? How long is the window, how long is the wait for the Blackhawks? How long is the wait?
I think it would go based on based on the afterglow of the Ben Johnson hiring.
Yes.
I would go in terms of being a competitive playoff team. Cubs, Bears, Bulls, Hawks, Sox.
The I think the problem with the Bulls is they haven't even started the teardown process yet. I mean, I guess letting
and yet they're still ahead of the Hawks and the Sox.
That's why I'm bringing it up.
I mean, and yet, you know, that's like, the thing.
What will the answer be on February 6th?
At this point in our sports city, mediocrity will get you third place. Because
is that unbelievable? Yeah.
It's the
And are the
Cubs,
Bears really that far
no,
ahead of?
No, that's a lot of hope, and hope's not a plan. Yeah. But I do think you have more of it now than you did 2 weeks ago. And you feel better about some of those things that could be falling into place. But it's a low bar in Chicago to clear when you talk about respectability or when you talk about how close are you to the top. That the Cubs clearly are the team that not only should be, but they are closest to being a playoff contender.
I totally agree with that. And if their bullpen comes through and they can – cut the blown saves in half, then they are. Then they're in the playoffs. Then they've won their division. And I think that's what everybody is kind of hoping. But how much are the Cubs' hopes wrapped around the other teams in the division not doing enough or losing too much?
It's a big element of that. It's a big element of their hopes.
Versus the Cubs doing enough.
It's a big element of them. You know, they're almost taking advantage of that.
Yeah.
If they were in the NL West, how different would their offseason approach be?
Well, if they were in the NL West, what would you think of
that?
They're not winning that division.
They're not winning that division.
No.
They would have to be seeking a wild card spot.
Yes.
Whereas in the Central, you can realistically, regardless of how consistent the Brewers have proven to be, you are the Cubs and you're in a market where you can outspend everybody in your division by a wide margin. You should go into every season feeling like the favorite. That's not the case in the NL West. I'm not sure it would be the case in the NL East because of the Phillies and the Braves.
If we declare the Cubs the favorite in their division, where would you put them in terms of their conference?
In terms of the National League, I think the Cubs in the National League are probably fifth. Because you've got a couple teams in the West, you've got a couple teams in the East, and then you're talking about maybe the Cubs, Phillies, Braves.
Yeah.
What about the Mets? I mean, they're spending like
they're spending
they should.
Like
they should be up there. They got Juan Soto, and I think you look at that. So maybe if you put them ahead of the Cubs.
And the Dodgers. Live
and
in
Dodgers and the Padres.
They live in a different area code.
Well, Padres are going to be pretty, I think, pretty good because of the pitching. But, yeah, they're in the Dodgers division, but I don't know if I would project them to be worse than the Cubs. So now you're the Cubs and you're looking at, we don't really have, what don't we have? There's things that you still want, and you have four younger players in your everyday lineup that are not proven players. And to me, that shouldn't be the case, as excited as we could be about Pete Crow Armstrong, Michael Bush, Matt Shaw, and Miguel Amaya. Those are still four guys that I don't think you could say have gotten to the other side of uncertainty.
And the Bears are next because in part they have players here. They don't have enough, and they got weak spots, but they have enough.
The Bears are, I think, next because they play in a league where parity reigns. And I think that you can get well quicker in the NFL because of the cap And because we see examples of teams that go from, it doesn't have to be worst to first, but they can become Minnesota. Playoff contenders. Look at Minnesota. There are other examples, and it happens every year. So next year, why can't it be the Bears' year to do that? You can convince yourself if they have a good free agency period, if they draft intelligently, and they put this staff together as well as it seems to be coming together. Yeah, 2025 for the Bears could be get back on the right side of the ledger win and loss-wise. Win 9 games or more. And then you start to talk about playoff contention because in the NFL, that's what it takes.
Okay. So then you get to the Bulls, and they haven't even made a trade yet, but they will have a first-round pick after they preserve that one, and who knows if they can pick up another one or two, and then it's the luck of the lottery to determine where they'll be at. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I know. The Bulls, to me, lack conviction. They don't know what they want to be. They haven't declared yet because they have fallen for some of these big victories in a way that
won't they declare a week from Thursday? Won't that be declaration day? Won't that be the time you know what they're doing and where they're going?
Mm-hmm. And if and when they do that.
Then on Friday we'll talk about how long it will take.
Because if they don't make any deals and they continue to flirt with the play-in phase.
They have to make deals.
So you've declared
I will declare.
All right, so let's say they do hypothetically do what you say they do and what people expect them to do, and they make moves that make it certain that they're going to be protecting that pick and have a percentage, 5% chance of getting the number one overall pick.
Okay.
How far away are they if they got the number one overall pick?
They're much closer with the number one overall pick than without it, but they're still 2 or 3 years away.
Yeah, I know. When's the next time you're going to celebrate? We're going to be talking about a playoff series victory at the United Center. I mean, it's going to be a while. Bulls or Blackhawks. Yeah. The United Center is not the place to go for playoff victories. I hope there's some good concerts next May and the May after that and the May after that, because there's not going to be any other reason to go to the United Center.
Well, I mean, I will say this. I believe the White Sox have decided to lose 100 games. I'm being honest. I just think that they had a terrible year last year. They're going to be better than that, and they're content to lose whatever it is, 109 or 110 games, whatever it might be.
Baseball being the way it is, I understand and appreciate that kind of cynicism and skepticism that is earned. But I don't know if there's any other way or as quick of a way to get back to respectability other than to bottom out the way that they have.
I mean, but there's bottoming out. And then to me, losing 100 games is bottoming out. Whatever happened last year, that wasn't bottoming out. That was almost a planned kind of losing. It was almost like it felt like punishment that season. It didn't, and I don't know. I don't know why we were punished, but you're not going to build a building. Okay, take this.
Do you think the Sox could conceivably lose between 95 and 100 games this year, and you could feel good about the direction of the franchise?
I think they're going to lose over 100 games no matter what. Honestly.
Do you think the style of play or the rhetoric that you hear from the manager, would there be anything that would be able to salvage something about this season if they lose more than 100 games?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't. I'll be honest with you. They got one position player. I actually like Tauchman. But so maybe I'd say they got
their outfield's a professional outfield. Tauchman, Luis Robert Jr., and Benintendi. Benintendi is easy to scoff at. He's their highest paid player.
I didn't scoff.
No, I'm not saying you necessarily, you the general sense, because people will hear that and say, boy, you know, he's been a disappointment based on his contract size. And he has been overall. Yeah. He finished strong. He's got to continue that and bring that into this season. If he doesn't, then you're right. The number of proven major leaguers on that roster, in that lineup on a daily basis, leaves you wanting for more. And their outfield is professional. Their first baseman, Andrew Vaughn, has a chance. The rest of the infield,
I don't know.
You're down on Vaughn. You have every reason to be.
I am really down on Vaughn.
They've got about 17 catchers to choose from.
They got two highly thought of prospects at catcher.
They're collecting
them. I don't know that they're ready to play yet in the major leagues, but I would hope we see one of them.
Second, third, and short are going to be manned by prospects, essentially.
Yes, that's
whether it's Ramos and Montgomery or Mydroth. There's a collection of young talent that is unproven, and that will excite some people, and it will make some people remain skeptical.
You know, I mean, I'll tell you what. I mean, if for me, success for that team this year could simply mean one or two players looking like they've evolved into major leaguers.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be, I think you'd be hard pressed to find it. But that would be that if you came away feeling like, wow, you know, there's a couple of really good guys here and more in the way, I think that would be what success.
Let's remember that, because I think that's a good working definition for what to expect. For spring training's 2 weeks away.
I know.
And I think that's a good thing to remember when we start to talk about what success will look like for a team that you really expect to lose 100 games. And if they did lose 100 games, they still might be the most improved team mathematically in baseball.
That's crazy. All right. I believe it's a Layla Tuesday. Marshall Harris is here. I saw Marshall, and I'm pretty sure Dan is here as well. We'll talk to our colleagues next. Mully and Haw on the Score.